Chapter 17. Ichisonga. Kofi's heart thundered in her chest. Each ragged breath seemed to rattle her bones as she fought to keep pace with Amin and Zane as they bolted out of Thornkeep. Both boys were sprinting ahead of her, and past them she could see a circular assembly of Darajas already gathered in the North Garden. A massive bonfire had been erected, and Fedu was standing beside it. Dread unfurled in the pit of her stomach as she took in his expression, the eerie calm in his face. "Over here," said Zane. Kofi let him take her hand and lead her around the circle until they found McKenna. She saw her own worry mirrored in the girl's eyes. "What's going on?" McKenna shook her head. "I don't know." She looked from Kofi to Zane to Amin. "He wouldn't tell us anything. He just told us all to come here." Amon's face grew stricken, and the muscles in Zane's jaw feathered. "Could he know?" he asked in a barely audible voice. "About the plan?" "I'm not sure how," McKenna whispered. "No one said anything." Kofi's eyes roamed over the Darajas in the circle. There were enough of them here that the likelihood of Fedu overhearing them was slight, but she was still on edge. She searched, trying to pick out faces in the crowd. She couldn't tell if anyone was missing. Once again, her eyes went to Fedu. He stood perfectly still, his hands folded, as he seemed to be waiting for something. Without warning, he cleared his throat.
"My children."
He opened his arms in welcome, as though this was a party.
"I have summoned you all this evening, with a bittersweetness."
He turned his eyes up to the night sky, the bonfire's flames casting his face in eerie relief.
"On nights like this, I am reminded of how beautiful Thornkeep is, of how truly unique it is. In an age where Darajas are hunted like dogs in some parts of this continent, Thornkeep is a commune, a safe harbor. In a flawed world, it is the closest I have ever known to a utopia."
Kofi exchanged a glance with McKenna, and then with Zane. Both of their eyes were fixed on the god, their expressions full of the same confusion and uncertainty. A chill lingered in the air. Try as she might, Kofi couldn't shake the feeling that something was wrong, that something bad was about to happen. She turned back to Fedu as he bowed his head.
"Alas," he said with a sadness, "a true utopia can only remain as such when its inhabitants abide by its rules."
He folded his hands again, as though in deliberation.
"The rules I have instated at Thornkeep are few, but some are absolute. When those rules are broken, I am forced to act."
He looked above the heads of the Darajas in the circle and signaled. Everyone turned their heads at once. In the dying light, it was difficult to see, but Kofi thought she discerned three figures making their way toward the crowd, two walking quickly, the one in the middle much slower. The dread intensified, and Kofi's breath grew shallow as she, Zane, Amin, McKenna, and the rest of the Darajas waited for those three figures to step into the firelight. When they finally did, Kofi nearly choked on a scream. Zola stood between two male Darajas from the order of Kumbhambana. Her usually neat black dreadlocks were disheveled, her yellow tunic was ripped, and her bottom lip was swollen. Kofi barely recognized her. Gone was the cheeriness she'd seen in the girl's eyes. In its place was raw fear. Beside her, Kofi heard McKenna's soft gasp.
"Come forward, Zola."
From the center of the circle, Fedu's voice was unnervingly pleasant, warm. Kofi's eyes went from him to Zola. At first, she half expected the girl not to move, to run as soon as the Darajas released her from their grasp. But when they did, Zola did not run. She hung her head so that her hair fell in front of her eyes as she trudged forward, and Kofi thought she'd never seen someone look so utterly defeated.
the circle of Darajas parted slightly to let her through, so that now it was only she and Fedu in its center. There was a long pause before the god spoke again.
"Many of you know Zola," he said. "She is a Daraja from the Order of Yufundi, one of Thornkeep's most talented blacksmiths."
Zola didn't move, didn't so much as acknowledge her name being called. Her eyes were trained determinedly on the grass, and Kofi thought she looked as though she was steeling herself for something.
"I remember the day I found Zola," Fedu went on, his lips touched by a smile. "She was a small child then, perhaps only 5. It was unusual to see a little girl in a forge, wandering among grisly old men, but she seemed to be enjoying herself. She has always had a natural gift for ironwork."
Next to her, Kofi felt more than saw Zane stiffen. It was clear that whatever unease she felt about this was shared. Fedu sounded nostalgic. The longer he went on, the more he sounded like he was speaking of someone in the past.
"Zola's parents were reticent the first time I invited her to apprentice with me here," Fedu continued. "They were protective, and I imagine they weren't fond of the idea of sending Zola away. But Zola's father, a non-Daraja, I might add, possessed in him a selflessness that allowed him to understand the value of sacrifice. He eventually agreed to send Zola to Thornkeep with me. You all would agree that she has had quite the home here."
None of the Darajas in the circle dared to agree or disagree. At the mention of her father, Zola lifted her head, her eyes glittering with tears, though she still did not speak. In the wake of Fedu's words, Kofi shuddered. She hadn't asked Zola exactly how she'd come to be at Thornkeep. She knew from McKenna that the Darajas here had been taken, but hearing Fedu's story now painted a chilling image in her mind. She saw Zola as that little girl Fedu had described, a little girl with her own family, with her own careful set of hopes and dreams.
"It was brought to my attention recently," Fedu went on, "that Zola has been working on projects that are banned at Thornkeep."
He pursed his lips, looking troubled.
"Would you care to speak about those projects, Zola?"
The girl didn't answer.
"Perhaps you require something to refresh your memory."
He held out his hand, waiting. After a moment, Kofi saw one of the yellow-clad Darajas break from the crowd, a young man. He trembled from head to toe as he approached Fedu holding a thin box. A nausea rose in Kofi. She recognized that box. Zola had shown it to her the first time she'd visited the forge. When Zola saw it, she stiffened. But Fedu's smile only grew. He took the box from the Daraja and inclined his head.
"Let us examine this," he said lightly. "Zola, if you would do the honors, unless someone else would like to volunteer."
Kofi's stomach twisted violently as Zola looked up, searching the crowd for help. No one stepped forward. Slowly, she took the box from Fedu and opened it. In the firelight, the papers within glowed a yellow-orange.
"Would you care to tell us what these papers are?" he asked softly.
Zola only stared at them. She looked far away, numb. After a moment, Fedu went on.
"These are drawings. Very good drawings, I might add, of weapons," he said. "The problem is, Zola, you are not supposed to be making weapons. You are forbidden."
Zola stared up at the god, stammering silently. She seemed to be trying and failing to find words to speak. More tears welled in her eyes.
"Shh."
Fedu cupped Zola's face with one hand. She shuddered under his touch.
"There, there, child. Be at ease. Even the most innocent lambs sometimes wander from the flock."
Zola closed her eyes, and Fedu brushed her tears away.
"I understand if you've made a mistake."
His voice was a murmur, but it carried, And you can rectify that mistake now. There's still an opportunity. All you have to do is tell me what the weapons are for. Zola opened her eyes. Kofi watched as, again, she looked up at the god. A lump in her throat bobbed as she swallowed hard. When she spoke, her voice was little more than a rasp.
I drew them for myself, for fun. I wasn't going to make them.
Fedu's eyes flashed. Now, little Zola. He shook his head, looking like an indulgent parent. Let us not insult each other. You are a clever girl, and I am an old god. Some of your drawings were indeed fanciful sketches, but some of them were not. Some of them were detailed, contained notes, material lists, precisely the things one might include for weapons they did intend to make. He pulled his hands away from her and clasped his hands. And so, I ask you again, what are the weapons for? Perhaps there are comrades among you who are planning something foolish, a coup, a rebellion of sorts? Zola dropped her head. If you tell me the name or names of your co-conspirators, Zola, I might be able to help you, Fedu coaxed. I do not wish to see you in any more pain. A chill rocked through Kofi as the gravity of his words sank in. Any more pain. I will give you one final chance to be truthful with me. Fedu had not raised his voice once, but now there was an edge to it, a sharpness like a knife's blade. Tell me what the weapons you planned to make were for. And who they were for. Kofi expected to see more tears when Zola raised her head again. Instead, what she saw in the girl's eyes was plain. Defiance. It blazed in her eyes and pronounced itself in the way she set her jaw, held her lips together firmly. Her answer was clear. Fedu shook his head.
Regrettable, he said. It is truly regrettable.
He turned then, and for the second time, held out his hand. A Diraja dressed in green stepped forward, a girl. She had to be from the Order of Maisha. Kofi had never met her before. The girl's eyes were hard as she glared at Zola, looking distinctly betrayed. From her tunic's pocket, she withdrew something small and handed it to Fedu. Kofi couldn't see what it was, until the god held it between his fingers, a tiny silver whistle. Cries went up around the crowd of Dirajas as they saw it, and the defiance Kofi had seen in Zola's eyes flickered out like a candle as she laid eyes on it too.
No,
she shook her head.
No.
I am grieved to do it, Zola.
Fedu sounded contrite.
It hurts me, truly. But you have left me with no choice. If the lamb wanders too far from the flock, if the lamb refuses to return to her shepherd, she must be left to the wolves.
No!
Zola howled, an inhuman sound. She dropped the box of papers as she fell to her knees, grabbing fistfuls of her hair.
No, please!
Fedu brought the whistle to his lips and blew. A heavy silence fell upon the garden, descending with all the blunt force of an axe. It was followed by a loud bang. Kofi started to turn, to look around, and then she felt it, a deep rumbling underfoot. It sounded like approaching thunder, but in the clear night sky, she knew that wasn't right. Something was charging forward on massive, pounding feet. It was coming from the stables, and vaguely Kofi remembered something from her first visit there, a stall with a closed door. She recalled now what Amon had said when she'd asked what was behind that door. Something you hopefully never have to see. Beside her, McKenna shuddered, and a single word escaped her lips.
Ichisonga,
she breathed.
Ichisonga.
Kofi didn't have time to ask what an Ichisonga was. In seconds, she had her answer. From the darkness, a creature emerged. At first glance, her instinct was to call it a rhinoceros, but that wasn't what this animal was. It ran on four legs, carrying a hulking body covered in rough gray skin that reminded her of armor. Thin reddish hair gathered around its ankles, and its eyes were flat and black. But that wasn't what scared Kofi. It was the massive white horn protruding from the beast's skull. It was twice the length of her arm, its point congealed with a reddish-brown crust. She knew what it was. The Dorajas scattered as the Ichisonga ran forward, but its dull gaze was focused, heading toward Zola. In a half-beat, she was on her feet, running. The Ichisonga roared a deep, guttural sound as it picked up its pace. No, Kofi clenched her teeth together. A fear she'd never felt the likes of before clawed up her throat as she watched Zola tear across the North Garden. Her steps were clumsy, impaired, but she ran as hard as she could. The Ichisonga picked up speed, snorted as it lowered its head. Its blood-crusted horn was getting closer to Zola's back, closing in. It would run her through. Zola turned abruptly, barely missing the horn, but it lacerated her arm. Dark blood sprayed through the air. She cried out but didn't stop. Kofi tore her gaze away from the Dorajah to look at Fedu. He was watching them both with a faint intrigue, the lazy way one might watch a passing butterfly. The Ichisonga picked up speed and, with a sudden burst of energy, knocked into Zola. She went flying, then landed face forward on the grass. For a second, Kofi thought she wouldn't rise, but she did, this time looking pained. The Ichisonga rounded on her, pawing at the grass. It lowered its head, and abruptly, Zola's eyes met Kofi's. I'm sorry. She mouthed the words, but no sound escaped. I'm sorry. Without warning, she took off again. The Ichisonga bellowed in fury, but this time, Zola didn't look back. Even from a distance, Kofi could see her eyes held a purpose they hadn't had in them before. She was no longer running away, but toward something. Kofi understood a second too late what was about to happen. She watched with horror as Zola ran into the mistwood. There was a hush, a sudden new silence, and every Dorajah in the garden stood perfectly still. Even the Ichisonga seemed to understand that its chase was over. Kofi stood, watching the mistwood's fog swirl in the quiet, betraying no sign that Zola had been there at all. Seconds passed, though for Kofi they could have been years. A shrill note broke the quietude, Fedu's whistle. Several Dorajas from the Order of Maisha rushed forward to subdue the Ichisonga and take it back to the stables. Fedu watched. When he spoke, his voice was gentle. Let this night serve as a reminder, he said, of the graces I offer to those in Thornkeep who abide by my rules, and of the punishment that awaits those foolish enough to break them. You are all dismissed. One by one, the Dorajas dispersed. As they passed her, Kofi saw that some looked shaken, others were sobbing outright, and some didn't look bothered at all. A breeze lifted, carrying with it the smell of the garden's flowers, the richness of burning firewood, and the lingering stink of old blood. Kofi didn't move, nor did McKenna, Zane, Amon, or Najiri. The five of them stood there in the silence, until they were the last ones left in the garden, alone with the dying bonfire. It's my fault. Zane spoke first, his voice little more than a whisper. I told her to begin work on the weapons. She drew those more detailed sketches because of me. We shouldn't talk about that here, Najiri cautioned. Someone might hear. I don't care, Zane erupted, a wildness in his eyes. His voice was strangled. It shouldn't have been her. He shook his head, It shouldn't have been her. Without a word, McKenna pulled Zane into her arms. She was shorter than him, but he collapsed against her. Amon joined them, tears wetting his cheeks as he bowed his head. Nijiri pulled Kofi in. The five of them simply stood there, drawing ragged breaths beneath a quiet moon. I'm getting us out of here, Kofi whispered. She wasn't sure who the words were for, her friends or herself, but she said them like an oath to the stars, a vow. I am going to get us out of here, and we are going home.